for your own self-consciousness and the fight for a continent is no different than the fight for your own consciousness. And these mass shootings that you are seeing taking place, this is white extremism. You see, they don't have to put up flags, Confederate flags, whatever. When you say America, you said white. As black people, we got to have symbols. But when you say America, you said white. And when you see this much identical activity occurring, where they're shooting non-white people, they're shooting white people in mass. Not situations where they were trying to achieve a specific goal that benefited themselves. You see, when somebody steals a car, when somebody steals somebody's watch or their wallet, that is a direct benefit to them. If you're a member of a gang and you're protecting your turf, that's a direct benefit to you. Walking into a Walmart and shooting 10 people, that's not a direct benefit to you. So whatever is the motive behind you doing that, that's something else. That's something else there. That's not the normal act of somebody exerting themselves in society to do something for their own personal gain. You're seeing something else going on. In the coming weeks and months, we'll start to hear other people echo what you heard here tonight. You heard it here first, because other people will guess their way through it. We do not. These people feel powerless. They feel weak. And they, in their minds, they want to reestablish that power of God. They want to reestablish their primacy. And it is not allowed to be questioned. And they are so determined to have it that they are willing to kill, they are willing to die. Because without it, life has no meaning and it has no purpose. So you're going to see a lot of people sit up here and wring their hands and ask why, and ask all the wrong questions. But in its proper social and historical context, we need to be asking the question, do white males in America who took this land and conquered people by any and all means possible feel that they are losing control of their worldview? In their worldview, they are the lord of all. They are the master of all they survey. They are the king of kings. You all have heard them. When they are honest, they state it like that. When they are completely honest, not speaking in code, when you can catch them unguarded, they say it like that. Remember the video of the guy who, the white fellow who was arguing with one of his white neighbors? He said, "I settled this neighborhood. If it weren't for me, your ass couldn't be here." Not in 17, I forget, this was a couple of years ago. Not in 1715, not in 1815, not even 1915. 2015, I think it was about. Doesn't really matter the precise year. But this is in the 21st century. Not the 17th or 18th or 19th. Today, talking about he settled the neighborhood. for white people. And the other white people should be grateful to him because he's, they'd be respecting him because he settled it and made it possible for them to be there. It doesn't matter which one of those white men wins the fight, because both of them are simply fighting over who will be in charge of white supremacy. That's not a win for you, damn it. You heard the guy at the airport when the lady at the ticket counter didn't respond to him the way he wanted her to. And he said, "You can't talk to me like that. I'm white." Remember that? Oh, I'm going all the way around on it. And that's not the only one. You've seen other videos where these guys said, "You can't talk to me like that. I'm white." Now, your first reflexive response is to say, "And what does that mean?" And anybody who responds to someone who says, "I'm white," with "what does it mean?" You're a damn fool. Because that means that you are either not understanding, you don't know, or you are not accepting the reality of the situation you find yourself in. Malcolm X wants to find it, and he said it so well, I simply cannot improve upon it. He said, when you hear a white person say they're white, they are not describing an incidental characteristic the way black people do. When a white man says he's white, he means I'm boss. And right now, these mass shootings are occurring because they are attempting to reestablish and reassert that they're boss. They feel they are losing it. They feel it is slipping away. That they have 100% control, but they are lashing out because they feel that their 100% control has diminished to 99% control. They can feel the sand shifting, and they are unwilling to share power. They are unwilling to share prosperity. They are unwilling to share anything because their entire worldview is surrounded, informed, and defined by the identity that they are boss. Gone ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number is 646-787-1933. That is 646-787-1933, your personal access code to the Blacks Radio program in existence. You are certainly welcome to give us a call here. I want to also talk about something else that I had seen out of California here. There are a bunch of people who had thought that they understood what was going on there, and I'll be explaining that as far as marijuana is concerned. A lot of folks are going to be getting their wake-up calls, and it is good because you got suckered and you needed to get suckered. I want to make one request if I can, and I know I'm probably in the most, not because I think it's a word, but because, just because I could. I know I am in the absolute most incorrect place in the world to ask for what I'm about to ask for, but I'm going to do it anyway. If you are a person who smokes weed, I can't believe I'm saying this. If you are a person who smokes weed on a regular basis, give me a call. You actually might have something to contribute tonight's program. No, I'm going to mock you and clown you. I could do that any day of the year. But if you are a person who smokes weed, this is the chance to do that. Now, if you call up, only call up to speak to the host. The phone lines are not for listening in over the phone. only call in if you actually want to speak. If you don't, that's what you got Ustream for. But that's what I want to. I have a few questions about that tonight, and I want other folks to have some questions from those of you who are the moles on the inside. But definitely, if you do give me a call, there's a couple of things I'd like to find out. Don't worry, I'm not going to mock you or clown you. There's actually some questions that I want to ask. But getting back to what I was just talking about, this is the result, perception, that they are even slightly beginning to lose even an inkling of their absolute stranglehold on power, wealth, and influence. That's what you're seeing right now. This is their volatile, vicious reaction to even the perception that they're losing it, that they're losing even a small bit of it. And the gun is the representation that they are attempting to channel their power of God to reassert themselves in the landscape. That's what it's about. That's what it's for. And when you witness these things happening, you need to understand that even though there may be white people dying, that this is a white supremacist event you are witnessing. It is a white supremacist event, not because of the whoever died. It doesn't matter whether the victims are white or whether the victims are black. It's not about who's the victim. It's about who is the assailant. And what is his motive? That's what it's about. Who is the assailant, and what are his motives for doing this? We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines here now. Let me get caller from 786. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 786, last try, you're on live. Okay, caller from 786 is calling from Mars. Okay, caller from 616, you're live with the Black Channel.
Can I be heard?
Okay, if you're on speaker, you need to take it off the speaker. Sounds like you're talking from the bottom of a soup can.
Okay, just a second.
Let me give him a chance to get his phone situation straightened out. People, have your phone situation straightened out before you pick up the phone to call. This is not like other programs where you're going to have 30, 40 minutes to get your act together, and there's no call screener. So if you call in, you need to be ready right then, right there. Also, make sure you're not calling us from a Milli Vanilli concert, okay? It needs to be someplace where you can actually hear what you're saying. Come on, people. We're trying to communicate to the masses here. Let's get it together. The phone has only existed now for over 140 years. Get your act together. Come on, man. Caller from 616, try again.
Okay, is the connection better?
Yeah, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Ken. I'm calling from California.
Ken calling from California. What's on your mind?
You wanted to talk to a cannabis user?
Okay, with the way your phone is acting, I can believe you are. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay. Ken, I want to ask you a question here, okay? Because I need information. How long have you been a pothead? I mean, a smoker. What do they call you? What do you all call yourself? I've been so out of the loop for so long, I don't even know what to call you all. What would be the proper term?
Uh, law-abiding citizen.
Okay. Yeah, besides that, I mean, would it be smoker, grifter, burner?
I call myself cool.
Well, that's one way of seeing it. The rest of us have a different word. But can we all agree, smokers? Would that be a way we could say that is smokers?
I mean, that would be kind of limiting the scope of consumption of cannabis.
You know what?
Cannabis consumer.
Okay. That's very good, everyone. By the way, I hadn't thought about that. It didn't occur to me offhand. There's more than one way to be a marijuana consumer. All right, I'm going to lower your volume just a little bit because there's something I want to read here, and then I need to get some information from you. The AP report,
okay.
This is the headline, sticker shock coming with California's new pot market. This is dated today, November 5th, 2017. Dateline, Los Angeles, California. California's legal marijuana marketplace is coming with a kaleidoscope of new taxes and fees that could influence where it's grown, how pot cookies and other munchies are produced, and the price tag on just about everything. Be ready for sticker shock. On a retail level, it costs about $35 to buy a small bag of good quality medical marijuana in Los Angeles, enough to roll 5 or 6 joints. But in 2018, for those of you who weren't keeping track, that's less than 60 days from now, when legal sales take hold and additional taxes kick in, the cost of that same purchase in the new recreational market is expected to increase the retail counter to $50 or $60. At the high end, that's about a 70% jump. Medical pot purchases are expected to rise in cost too, but not as steeply, industry experts say. Or consider cannabis leaves, a sort of bottom shelf product that comes from trimming prized plant buds. The loose snip leaves are typically gathered up and processed for use in cannabis-laced foods, ointments, concentrates, and candies. Growers sell a trash bag stuffed with clippings to manufacturers for about $50. Now, everyone pay attention to that part. The growers are currently able to sell these leaf clippings from marijuana to manufacturers for about $50, but come January, the state will tax those leaves at $44 a pound. That means the tax payment on a bag holding 7 to 8 pounds would exceed current market price by 5 or 6 times, forcing a huge price hike, or more likely, rendering it essentially valueless. Now, governments struggling to keep up with the cost of everything from worker pensions to paving streets are eager for the cascade of new tax money from commercial pot sales that could eventually top $1 billion statewide. But higher taxes for businesses and consumers give the state's thriving illicit market a built-in advantage. Operators in the legal market have been urging regulators to be aggressive about shutting down rogue operators. Donnie Anderson, a Los Angeles medical cultivator and retailer, predicted the higher level of state taxation next year, quote, is going to just help the illicit market thrive, end quote. He said more needs to be done to cut the cost, especially for medical users, many of whom won't be able to absorb a price jump. Now, listen to the next paragraph that the writer uses. The increased tax rates are just one part of California's sprawl plan to transform its long-standing medical and illegal markets into a multi-billion-dollar regulated economy, the nation's largest legal pot shop. The reshaping of such an expansive illegal economy into a legal one hasn't been witnessed since the end of Prohibition in 1933. Now, I'll ask you a question. Oh, one more thing. Let me put this in here right quick because I want to make sure I don't miss this. It also says that local governments are free to slap on taxes on sales and growing, too. So not just the state government, but local governments can now put taxes on marijuana. And this is important, the story says, because that's created a confusing patchwork of rates that vary city to city and county to county. In the agricultural hub of Salinas, southeast of San Francisco, where all the tick heads are, the tick heads and potheads apparently are going to go hand in hand, voters approved a tax that will eventually rise to $25 a square foot of space used to cultivate the leafy plants, a rate that's equivalent to about $1 million an acre. But farther north in the pot-growing mecca of Humboldt County, rates will be a comparative bargain, ranging from $1 to $3 for a square foot of cultivation space. By some estimates, Humboldt County has up to 15,000 unregulated pot grows, and Supervisor Ryan Sundberg said he was eager to fashion a tax scheme that would encourage cultivators to come into the legal system and adhere to environmental regulations. So, the big pot scam, the scheme, whatever, is in full effect. So, Ken, I wanted to ask you a question. And the question I wanted to ask you is, right now, how much does it cost you for a bag of weed?
I'm not going to lie. I just came from a dispensary. I cop an ounce for 25 bucks. No lie.
Okay, now, how many joints can you roll with that so we can have some frame of reference?
I don't roll joints. I roll blunts.
Okay. How many can you mix, sir?
I couldn't put a number on it because sometimes I roll little pinner blunts, and then other times I roll like big king palms.
Okay, Ken, you got to understand, most of the rest of society is completely sober and straight, so they have absolutely no clue whatsoever about drug culture. They don't know what you're talking about right now. So why don't you go ahead and explain exactly what you mean? Because 9% of people listening to you right now have no earthly clue what you're talking about.
I bought a lot of marijuana for a very little amount of money. And all I had to do was present my ID. There was no difference from buying a beer.
Okay, but I'm talking about from the derivations you just gave us there. Between a joint and a blunt and a part of it, explain the differences.
Okay, so a blunt is rolled in a tobacco leaf typically. And it's kind of like a mini cigar. And then a joint is more like a cigarette, it's equivalent to that. And a pinner blunt, that's like a smaller blunt.
Okay, so what you're basically saying is that joints are not sufficient for you, that you needed something bigger.
Joints can be really big. I just prefer the bite of the tobacco wrap. And I just like the way they handle better. Plus, I grew up listening to rap music, so it's kind of like I'm smoking blunts.
Okay, because it's not enough to just smoke the blunt. We gotta have a soundtrack too. Okay, so you say that's for an ounce of weed, be able to roll. You'd be able to make how many blunts? Because I think people are familiar with switchers and whatnot. You would be able to make how many blunts with an ounce of weed?
I don't know. You're using measurements that square you. You sound like the government right now.
Yes, because that's most of society does not smoke, and so the only thing we have is standard measurements. We're not part of weed culture, so the type of jargon which is what you were using earlier. When you talk about blunts and things, that's jargon. The terms that mean something only to people in those environments. It's kind of like tech heads. That's why a lot of the stuff they use, when I worked in corporate America for telecommunications companies, one of the biggest rules was don't use jargon, because that's something employees understand, but the customers have no clue. So for you, yeah, you understand those amounts in the way that you're saying it to other people. When you say a blunt, you're not just saying a blunt, you're also saying a unit of measurement, because anybody who smokes knows exactly how much weed could fit into it. But for the rest of society, we have no earthly clue how big it is, how much it is. Especially, for example, most people don't even smoke cigarettes, and now we're moving up to cigars, which is essentially what you're talking about. So I'm trying to do it. Yes, we need to do it the way that we all have a frame of reference. So if you're saying you don't know what an ounce is, we're in big trouble here, because that's the only way you can talk to us.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
How about this?
The small bag that they claim that would be $60 after the
tax hike.
This ounce was probably like an eighth of an ounce.
A half ounce, which is what I got for $25. That's like four of those bags that they referenced in the story.
Okay, let's get something straight here then, so we'll all be aware. For you to be able to roll five blunts, about how much would that cost you?
At this rate, in California, pennies on the dollar.
I practically smoke for free.
I guess that's a good place to be. My problem is, I think most people would. But the real thing is, I need to get some numbers on this, because, like I said, we're being kind of vague here, and I really need to get some numbers on it.
Fine.
For the price that you would pay, maybe you would get an eighth here for $25, $30. And then they said that an eighth can roll like five units of smoke, I guess, so I mean, I guess you just divide 25 by five, maybe like $5. Hence I got five on it.
Okay, so I'm not really sure exactly how those things would break down, but this sounds like that would be a hefty multiple over what people would currently pay. Because if you got one of your homeboys who can hook you up instead, I don't know what the homeboy price is. I've never touched that stuff because I'm smart. But as far as how much it would cost to get one of your friends to do that, I don't think they're going to charge you for your $50 to be able to make four or five joints or even four or five blunts. I don't think they would cost that much.
I dare them to try to charge people in California that much to smoke some weed.
It grows out of the ground.
Nobody, I guess this would affect mostly the squares.
I don't care. I'm cool.
Well, it really just depends, because here's the thing. Most people were under the delusion in Colorado that when they legalized, quote, legalized, because it wasn't really legalization, it was decriminalization. I mean, they didn't even do that. But they were under the delusion that if they legalized marijuana, that it would be like cigarettes and everything would be fine, and that's not what happened. What happened was, now you've got this legal cartel that is now going around trying to find out, they're still in the business of knocking off, you know, whoever is trying to sell illegally. They're trying to force everybody into the legal system, as it were. So it doesn't matter that you could get it cheaper from one of your friends when they're still sitting around battering rams and still running around arresting people if they got it illegally. That's the real issue. Well, let me finish first. You are correct. You will still have all of these illicit market, as they call them, these illegal market ways of getting the stuff. You'll still be able to do that, but it's not going to be any safer.
Okay, I'll say this. I'm originally from the state of Michigan. When I was in the state of Michigan, I was in a house that was raided by a joint task force of three different police agencies. And that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. I was in a house that accepted a package that contained, from what I heard, 1.6 pounds of marijuana. I am avoided getting caught up in all of this because I was on probation at the time, and my probation officer was cool, and I lucked out. But that could have ended really bad. The culture behind that is that it never left me. I still am very leery of any sort of legal weed market without any sort of legalization on the federal level.
So you're preaching to the choir. I totally understand. I never fell for this free weed stuff.
But I just happen to be where the best weed is from, and it's plentiful, and it's super cheap, so I'm chilling. Okay, and are you black? I seriously, yes, I am black. I'm Nigerian American, African American, or African American.
All of those classifications qualify for me. But I'll say this, all that stuff that you read in that newspaper, that's for white people who are afraid to buy weed from black folks.
That's all that is.
Well, the thing is, prohibition may not have worked as well. You're going to be driving up the prices on the illegal market if you try to make this stuff outrageously priced, which is what they're trying to do. You're going to drive up sales in the illegal market, which is not what they want. So maybe their prices will come down, but my thing is a lot of folk are under the illusion that all their drug task forces are going to go away here in January, and these pricing schemes make it very clear that they got some big ambitions about how much money they want to bring in. And just like today, I mean, you know, we can say what we want to. Most people are not at home rolling their own cigarettes. They're going to the store and paying whatever the hell the price is, but they're not at home rolling their own cigarettes. They're not doing that. And eventually they see a situation where marijuana is going to do the same thing. They don't think that people are going to roll their own and grow their own if it's available commercially and they don't have to worry about getting arrested for it. If they're willing, look how long it took for them to get to the point of legalizing this stuff, or at least creating a little framework for it. They're going to go another couple of decades to be able to funnel people into doing it legally and paying the higher prices for it.
I'm nearly 100% against the legalization of marijuana as it has played out in these various jurisdictions.
And you know something that really bothers me about the legal marijuana market is that
You want to know why we were asking. Right, because I smoke.
Right, because I smoke. I just wanted to call up. I was listening to the last call.
Okay, I was about to go in on you, but if you smoke, you act. This is the one broadcast that the stoners will actually be safe for saying the ignorant, numbskull stuff they usually say. So you're in luck tonight, Jay. You're actually in luck. We're just asking some basic questions. How long have you been weed-head?
About 12 years?
12 years? How old are you?
28.
Oh, my God. I won't ask where your parents were. We're not here to ask that tonight. I wanted to find out here. At 28 years old, it sounds like you're a professional smoker. How much would it cost you to get an ounce? Now, in Texas, it ain't legal anywhere. And we're not here to put you on Front Street, but it's not legal anywhere in Texas. So in Texas, a completely illegal market, how much would it cost? Do you know what an ounce is, first of all? Because the last caller was not clear on how much an ounce is. Apparently, the metric system has passed. Loud you can buy. Do you know what an ounce is?
28 grams.
Okay, he's ready for his schedule one, everyone. In any case here, so how many joints, let's start with a joint. Let's not get off in the blunts and things. Mm-hmm. How many joints would you be able to roll with an ounce?
You can roll about 26.
Okay, so you'd be able to roll a couple of dozen joints with an ounce.
Right.
Right. How long would that last you, Jay?
I usually don't smoke, Jay, so...
It would last me a while.
It would last me probably like a solid month.
Okay, so you would actually be able to make it a month on an ounce. He's a part-time smoker. All right, do you smoke blunts?
No, I don't smoke cigarettes.
The blunts have the tobacco, so...
So I don't smoke those. I only smoke J's when I'm like music festivals.
Otherwise,
I smoke out of a bong.
Okay, so you're a bong smoker. Okay, you're one of the sophisticated people going on these pipe emporium shops. That's what you do. Okay,
yes.
That's cool.
Yes.
Well, I mean, look, I made it that far. I know that much that you can do that. So, all right. That's what joints. Now, let me be clear here. You said with joints. I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Are you saying that an ounce would last you a month even with your bong, or are you saying it would be a month with joints? I don't know exactly how long would an ounce last you with the way you usually consume.
An ounce, like a month and a half.
Okay. So an ounce would last the both of you hitting the bong for a month and a half.
Yeah, because I work 10 hours, so I don't have time to sit here and smoke all that. And when I do smoke, it's like a bowl, half a bowl, and I'm done.
Okay, well, that makes perfect sense. Now, how much, let me make sure we're clear about this. In Texas, on the illegal market, how much is an ounce?
I can get it for probably about
180.
$180 for an ounce.
180 to 200. Yeah, just that.
For me.
Okay, so you get it from one of your friends?
Right.
Okay, because there's no store you can go to buy it there. So.
Exactly.
$200 for an ounce. That sounds kind of exorbitant. I'm not a weed smoker, so I'm not the authority on this by any stretch of the imagination. But
it's better than what it used to be.
I mean,
I used to sell people ounces when I was traveling around colleges
for like 400.
Okay, I am in no way am I disputing you? I'm not arguing with you. I meant when I said before, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you if it's a good deal, a bad deal, a steal, highway robbery. I couldn't tell you anything. I'm strictly going off of what I'm being told. So clearly you're happy with the price of it, which is pretty good there. That's perfectly fine. So with this thing I told you about here in California, well, were you listening to what I said to the previous caller about what they want to do in California?
Right, yeah. The price gouging basically on marijuana.
So by your math, if you got enough to roll 5 or 6 joints, you said that for an ounce you could roll a couple dozen joints for $180, correct?
Right. Right.
Okay. They wanna to do 5 or 6, they're saying about $35. In 2018 they wanna increase that to around $50 or $60 to be able to roll 5 or 6 joints. So that would essentially, for those of you not doing the math, that would essentially make it $10 a joint. Is what that price jump would do. Right now, they're saying it'll cost you $5 or $6 a joint. When California gets done working you over, they want that price to be around $10 a joint. So, Jay, how would that be a drastic thing for you? Would you be willing to pay $10 a joint?
No, absolutely. I'll give you a situation.
If I'm out somewhere and I'm desperate,
and someone's like, "Hey, I got,"
and someone's like, "Hey, I got, you know, I got a J for $10."
I'm not really that desperate.
If I was out somewhere and I was desperate, and this is in the Lone Star State where you can't get nothing, but if he was desperate, he'd pay that. In California, where weed is already highly accessible, and they want to jump it up to $10, and you say you wouldn't even pay that in Texas.
No, absolutely not. It's not worth it.
Okay. So I suppose if they tried to move it to $15, that would be a deal breaker for you.
You can get heroin for less. So no way.
Now that's way out of my league. But I had no idea. No wonder so many heroin addicts. By the way, since when did heroin become opioids? I always thought it was a hard drug. Now heroin has been renamed an opioid. Since when do we get to do that? Oh, yeah, when white folks use the drug. Because crack couldn't be an opioid. We don't get to do that. Heroin gets that. All right. But in any case here, okay, so if you, with that type of pricing structure there, what would it take for the state to be able to encourage you to pay $10 for a joint?
I mean, I've been smoking it for so long.
I know it's illegal.
It doesn't even feel illegal to me.
So
I feel like whenever they pass it, it's going to be legalized nationwide. I just know that they're going to mess with the pricing. There will be people that will be growing it on their own,
and I'll probably buy it from them.
I just can't see myself buying stuff like Marlboro or whatever cigarette manufacturer starts to try to get into it
and raise up the prices.
I just don't think it's going to happen. I know it's going to get legalized, but I think they're going to have a hard time getting everybody to buy it.
Right now, you're paying $180 about for an ounce. If a similar pricing structure were to take place in Texas, you'd be looking at something with the number of joints you said you could roll, your price would go from $180 to like $260.
Yeah, just about.
And that for you would be unacceptable.
I'm not in the market for paying more for it.
Just because the racist government says I can't.
So you're saying that you would not conform to the cigarette pricing scheme?
Absolutely not.
Because they, with cigarettes, it's legal, and there's not really a big, I mean, there is an illegal market, but most people don't want to get in trouble or run afoul of the law and risk getting arrested for it. So they buy, they pay the extra prices on cigarettes, although at the same time they're trying to discourage people from smoking, which is really antithetical. But in your case, you're saying that you're trying to pay less, and they essentially they would have to start making a discount product for you. But the bottom line is that what you're saying is you would not pay more for it.
No, and if another
I highly doubt that they'll pay more either.
So you're saying that you would rather just, you would prefer to just keep doing what you're doing, going on the black market, you would prefer to do that than to pay legally and not take any risk whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just feels like the way I got my system set up,
I'm barely taking any risk now. So,
are you worried that if they do move forward with something like that, that you'll actually see an increase in the anti-drug interdiction thing? Basically, they'd be running it mafia style to try to hunt down people like yourselves who are not conforming to the open market. Are you worried about that?
I should be.
Because I don't put it past them to do crazy stuff. They'll try something.
I mean, for people who don't know, they still got anti-whiskey, anti-moonshine task forces in Virginia and West Virginia and really every state, to be totally honest, although it's the biggest in the southern United States. They still got that. And here's the other thing is that, now let me find out here, is your connect or your plug, see, I've mastered some of the lingo.
Is your connect,
I'm ready for a Method Man video. Is your connect white or black?
Yes.
Okay, he's stoned. Let's try this again. Is your connect white or is he black?
He's black.
Yes, I know you're a little high right now, but you get a pass tonight. This will be the only time you get a pass. Next weekend, I'm clowning the hell out of y'all. But this weekend, you get a pass. Okay, so you say your connect is black.
Right.
Does he have a bunch of white customers?
He has a couple.
Okay, because Michelle Alexander made the point that drugs are ethnically balkanized like everything else in society, that blacks sell to blacks and whites sell to whites. When it comes to weed, however, that seems to skew a little bit differently. Black weed dealers, you know, when white folk want some illicit drugs or whatever, particularly weed, there's a certain number of them that disproportionately seek out a black source to get it from. So I was just wondering whether or not in that situation, because if white folk have the ability to get it legally from the state, ostensibly from white growers, if everything else in society holds true, it seems to me that they would also tend to want to buy it from a white grower instead of their black connect that they've been buying it from. And I wonder how that would affect people like your source. I wonder how that would affect what they do.
Yeah, it will.
Because I tell you, if I was still selling, it would affect me. I sold to everybody.
So
I wasn't trying to sell just because it was weed.
So
if I'm selling anything else,
I'd probably sell to selected people, but with weed, it was whatever.
But people are probably going to lose money.
They should probably think about transitioning their illegal business into something legal.
Just about anything, I don't know.
Well, that's the kind of thing I'm taking a look at, because you have to understand something, and I want everyone to be clear about this. If they legalize this in these places, everybody is saying that they won't pay the higher prices, but when they start slapping people on probation and parole, when they get done working your ass over with those costs and getting, and they'll move these things up to being felonies, just like they're talking about decriminalization and whatnot, they'll move the illegal stuff up to being the new felonies. And like I say, in Texas, for example, remember in Texas, you got a legislator there who wants to make it five strikes and you're in. If you get five misdemeanors, then that will qualify as a felony. So with that, with those type of schemes and shenanigans going on, I wonder how many people are watching that, because if a person's got a choice between paying double the price for their weed or facing a felony, a lot of people, I think, are going to, if they're going to take a risk, they're going to take a risk on the side of, well, how much do I need to pay to avoid a felony? That is, that's what tends to happen with alcohol. That's what happened with cigarettes. That's what happened. The past is the best indicator of the future. And if that's what happened with alcohol and cigarettes, why would it be any different with weed? Even though you got better sources now, you're right. You do have better sources unless your source gets locked up.
Yeah, that's a fear.
I mean, is he willing to do a drug trafficking charge?
If I was still in the game, no. I got out on some way lesser stuff, but trafficking
in Texas.
They will let me out soon.
All right, brother. Well, thank you very much for giving us a call. I'll let you have the last word.
No, I've been listening to the show for about a year.
I'm sorry. Wait, let me correct myself. Your program.
He stoned.
About an hour ago.
Is your girlfriend black, by the way?
Stop.
Yes.
Is your girlfriend black?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much does she weigh? Just out of curiosity. He hung up the phone. I just wanted to find out. If she smokes weed too, I bet you she's slender. I wanted to find out the weed prices. I wanted to find out the weight. The average weed smoking female. I'm trying to expand my understanding. Working on it. Caller from 408, you're on live with Black Channel.
Hello, this is JR.
Hello, this is JR calling from the Bay Area. How's it going, brother?
JR calling from the Bay Area. Do you smoke?
I actually stopped smoking. I'm sorry, getting a lot of feedback.
I'm rolling. Yeah, actually stopped smoking.
I experimented with Jason? Yes, JR.
Sorry
about that. I'm hearing a lot of feedback.
Sounds like he's experimenting now. Well, go ahead, say what you have to say, brother.
No. Trust me, I experimented in college, 2009, 2010, and around that time, we were able to procure marijuana if we had a marijuana card.
And so I'll go to these weed dispensaries, and the pricing of the weed depended on the quality of the weed.
They have lower shelf, mid shelf, and higher shelf.
So, for a gram of weed,
for a bottle shelf would be about
$10 to $15
and for upper shelf would be $20 to $30,
depending on what dispensary you go to.
Okay, but what would be the street? What would be the street price? Is the real thing in California? What would be the street price for a gram?
Approximately $20, depending on who you go to.
Okay, so $20 for a gram is the street price.
Yeah.
And the dispensary price would be how much?
Well, like I said, all depends on the quality.
For the lower shelf, it could be anywhere from five to ten bucks.
Or ten to twenty bucks, depending on who you go to.
The higher shelf.
The higher shelf, of course, they're going to charge you more because it's better quality of weed.
Okay. And do you think
folks are willing to go to jail for it? I apologize, didn't hear you.
You think they're willing to go to jail for it?
Was I willing to go to jail for it? Well, if you get caught with weed here in California, they just give you a ticket and let you go.
Maybe.
But if you have cash on you and marijuana on you, that shows the officer that you possibly have the propensity to distribute marijuana, and that's obviously going to be a felony. And you can go to jail.
Where black people are concerned, it's arbitrary. It can literally be whatever they wanted to be at the time they wanted to be it. And my issue is, if they have an opportunity once and for all, because let's just be totally honest about it. We talk about Dero Records. That was built on drug money. I mean, let's just say it like it. Ruthless Records was built on drug money. DJ Quick built on drug money. Death Row Records was built on drug money. We can go down the list, but let's just say it like it is. They were built on drug money. These were young black males who, even though they were intelligent and savvy, and obviously were business-minded, they lived in a society that was trying to economically starve them to death physically. And so they said, hell, I'm going to do what I got to do. So we talk about Nicky Barnes. Or, I don't want to talk about Nicky Barnes because that just really, they didn't change from being illicit. But we're talking about Dr. Dre. Okay, he's made a deal for $1 billion. Okay, but Dre got there off of drug money. I mean, truth be told, so when they did that movie Straight Outta Compton, when they talked to him on HBO, we're leaving out Harry O. Hell, forget Harry O. What was going on before then?
Yeah, they cut about the picture.
Lonzo was a straight dude, but they weren't. So Eazy-E was selling drugs. We can go down the list. That was Dre's boy, but Eazy was slanging. And that was what they made their money at. So you got a bunch of black males out here, a bunch of black people who they became prosperous off the drug trade. Mexican and Colombians become profitable off the drug trade. And you are looking at a situation where the Europeans are getting ready to say, you know what, we're getting ready to just tuck that in. Because the bottom line is that socially speaking, sociologically speaking, if people have the opportunity to purchase something legally, they will choose that over risking running afoul of the law. And we're looking at a situation where let's just be totally honest, how many of these fellas out here, they still got that Al Capone in them? Back in the 80s and 90s, you had hustlers like that, you know, back then. Do we really got hustlers like that anymore? Do we really even have that? I don't know. We might. They might relearn the craft. I don't know. But what I am saying is that in a legal environment where people are able to buy legally, in a lot of cases, man, they'll just work overtime at their job. And a lot of these dudes who are selling weed right now are about to find the market is about to dry up on them because their customers are willing to pay extra to not go to jail. And what this produces is a situation where they end up watching their money fall off. So now selling weed is the selling drugs is the only skill they know. They're now going to have to migrate over into harder substances. So the white folk who use heroin, Governor Paul LePage is going to be giving them free needles and saying that that's a public health issue for the white folk who use it. But if you're a black person selling it to them, you're going to get hit with kingpin charges. You're going to get hit with multiple felonies. And that's what they're going to do with you. So they're going to destroy the economic market that black males are, the few that are left, because the dope game really fell off over a decade ago. Let's just say it like it is. The dope game really fell off a decade ago. You got a bunch of rappers who are not drug dealers, by the way, and never were. Talking about this thing is nostalgia, but in reality, it ain't like that. But even for the ones who would be left, they're going to have to move up into harder stuff where they're going to get the stiffest sentences. And they're going to have to take the highest risks. They're going to have to take the highest risks, and they're going to have to accept the stiffest sentences. That is the environment that is currently being cultivated. Because the bottom line is your plug, your connect, your dealer, your source might be kingpin-minded, and he might be ready for a shootout with the police, but his customers are not. They're not willing to do 5 or 10 years. And if they really want to have their stuff, they would just prefer to buy it legally if they can. Caller from 212, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on live. Put down the bomb. This Negro here, sir, you're on.
Yes, hi, how you doing?
Yes,
man?
Hi, how you doing, man?
What's your name? Where you calling from? And how long you been smoking?
I ain't been sleeping long.
But this Terry.
He's deaf.
And I'm from Mississippi.
Terry from Mississippi, what's on your mind?
How you doing, sir? I'm not
I'm not a smoker, and I'm not a user.
If you're not, you'll do until he gets here. Go ahead.
A lot of the weed is on the market,
and that's why the problem is coming in.
When the best of wampers make money,
they'll do anything
with the politician
to get the weed out there to be sold on the market.
Nobody really cares about where it's coming from. They just want to make money on it. That's the flip side of it. And we as black people ain't smart enough to take advantage of that. Because most of these companies got it as penny stock, and we can go in there and buy that up.
Well, no, you can buy it up, but you're not going to make any money on it. And the reason for it is because the market is too immature right now. There are no solidified, profitable players in the game right now. And until that shakes, primarily because it's still illegal at the federal level, but there haven't been any companies that have staked themselves out as being the winners. We don't have a Facebook of weed yet. We don't have a Google of weed yet. We don't have a Netflix weed yet. So until that happens, you're just going to have a bunch of risky investments and a bunch of stocks that are going to be worth nothing. So that's what's waiting on, is somebody to actually establish themselves as a major player. Until that occurs, it's not happening. Has nothing to do with politicians.
You haven't had a company
that has won yet. Now, while everybody is taking a look at these startups, they haven't taken a look at institutional power. Facebook is where it is.
Right.
Google is where it is because
right.
institutional media companies invested in them. You have a bunch of people on the board of directors and the CEOs who came from broadcast television and broadcast radio. They understood media markets and they understood how to migrate into this new media market. Everybody is talking about these startup weed companies. Nobody's talking about all of the institutional drug
that
dealers, controlled substance companies that have been doing it for decades,
right.
like Budweiser and Coors and Philip Morris and Lorillard and R.J. Reynolds. Nobody is talking about those companies. And two decades ago, when medical marijuana was being started to be legalized, I remember one media outlet, they had asked Philip Morris, do you have a plan in place for how to manage marijuana sales? To which Philip Morris only responded, there is that marijuana is illegal at this time, and we would not engage in any type of illegal sales. But
exactly.
that was not
exactly.
the question. But that was not the question that they were asked. They were not asked, would you sell marijuana? They were asked, do you have a strategy in place for being able to sell marijuana? That was what you were asked. Have you done any type of research or have any type of plan in place to be able to sell it upon its legalization? That was what you were asked. Have you all ever sat around the table and talked about what would we do if weed were legal? How would we pursue it? Because it doesn't matter that your local co-op or these startup companies, whether, I mean, all these people would be is like Instagram. Or WhatsApp. That's all they would be like. And then Facebook is going to come in and buy them. So all these smaller companies that you're talking about getting into the weed business and they're trying to start up in California, yeah, they think they're big numbers now. When R.J. Reynolds shows up and says, we'll pay you $3 billion for your company, that son of a gun is sold.
Yeah.
It's sold.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what we really need to be looking forward to.
That's what behind the doors. That's what behind the doors. Now the politicians, they're getting on board with the politicians, so they can get the laws. So they can get the laws passed. So they can get that done. So they can get that
and
done.
And then they can market it.
And then they can market it to the big companies.
Rephrase that. You said then they can market it to the big companies. Then they can market it.
Yes.
Then they can market it to the white companies.
Well, that's what I mean.
We black people don't own.
What will happen is when these large white companies step in, the prices will drop. Take a look at gasoline. Take a look at anything else. Take a look at memory chips. When these white companies get involved, they're going to drop the prices. They're going to drop the prices so low that your local weed can't keep up. That's the
that's
other
right.
possibility.
That's right. And that's what can make the value of the stock go up.
Well, long term, short term, it's a possibility. But my real point is I'm taking a look specifically on what would be the effect on black society. Even if you call yourself being in the weed game, when they get done,
you won't be.
That's what will happen. And they've already got it in place.
You'll be sending federal attention.
Behind an ounce.
I
warned people before they thought that the laws were about to let them off. These laws are not about to do that. They're about to be more draconian and more penalizing than they've ever been. That's what it's about to be. For a little while, they're going to pull back. And then once this market, they're going to say that the reasons they're locking you up are not for drug dealing. It's for evading taxes. Like Al Capone. Al Capone did not go to jail for selling beer. He didn't go to jail for running rum.
No.
He went to jail for tax evasion.
Not even for killing nobody.
Right.
No, he did not go to jail for murder. He went to jail for tax evasion. So what does that really tell you? That really tells you that they were less concerned about the people he killed and more concerned about him taking money out of their pockets.
That's right. That's right.
I'll let you have the last word.
We have to study the
companies. We have to study
the
companies
and
what
they're
doing, every movement.
And make better investments.
And make better investments.
Not just use them.
Not just use
them. People that use it.
People that use it need to start investing in these companies that they buy from.
That
they want to continue to buy. And continue to use.
In the next two or three years,
it'll be a whole different ballgame with illegal
drugs. It'll
be illegal drugs. Everything will be across
the
table. Once it hit the market,
that means the politician got
involved.
And made it legal. We can't make it legal. We can only do what they allow.
Us to do.
And they want to send every person.
That's a drug dealer now to jail.
With higher numbers.
Federal time.
And they will tell you,
thank you,
that they did it under legal patient. Thank you very much for giving us a call. Imagine that the highest sentencing numbers that you will see may actually come under so-called legalization. Isn't that ironic? Under, quote, legalization is when you could actually end up experiencing the highest penalties for incarceration under so-called legalization. Isn't that amazing? I'm about to take one more phone call here. Let me get caller from 804. You're on live at the Black Channel.
I just tuned in.
Okay. You just tuned in. Did you just get off the bong, brother? What's going on?
Say again.
Okay. I can't do this. All right. That's the problem with opening up a broadcast to substance abuse, substance abusers. That's the problem with opening it up to them. Things get real slow. It gets real sclerotic. It gets real incoherent very, very quickly. It gets very incoherent very quickly. So this is your phone on drugs. That's what this is. Brave new world out there, people, brave new world. And a lot of you are not ready. Young black people were not ready for the evils of feminism. They were not ready for the evils of integration. And you are not ready for this. You think you know where this is going to go. You think you know where this is going to head. You think you know how this is going to turn out. You got no idea. You think that more opportunities are about to open up and they're about to close the doors. While they were telling you that more opportunities were about to open up. If you haven't been to our website, blackchannelfilms.com, and it's blackchannelfilms.com, you definitely want to check it out. Whole bunch of people have been talking about gentrification, and by the way, I don't want to be remiss and not say this. Let me take a brief aside here. To the Atlanta Black Star, these absolutely shameless individuals at the Atlanta Black Star, a publication that was so skullduggerous, underhanded, and dirty that when we were releasing our historic film, Gentrified, Ethnic Cleansing American Style, the first of its kind that specifically spoke as gentrification, not being a class issue, but being what it is, a racial issue, Atlanta Black Star attempted to destroy and sabotage the film by being in Atlanta, where it purchased so much advertising, and they refused to speak about the movie until the day before. and they just put out a video talking about demolishing things in Atlanta, essentially talking about gentrification. And in the video, they showed one of my billboards in Atlanta. They showed one of my billboards in Atlanta from the gentrified movie. So these same folks who tried to pretend that they didn't know it was happening, when it was time for them to make their video, all of a sudden they knew where it was. They don't see us as black people fighting white supremacy. They see it as them competing against us. That they're like Cersei Lannister. They're only interested in our survival as long as they get to run things. Roland Martin does not care about black people's survival. He only cares about what's in it for him. And as far as he's concerned, black folk as a group can go to hell as long as he can get what he wants. And that if he can't, he's not interested. That's what these people are doing. If they can't get what they want, then we can all go down. But there's something else I want you all to understand. This is good. You see, what you don't understand over there at the Atlanta Black Star is that you don't understand. You are either driving events or you are being driven by events. You either set trends or you follow trends. I didn't wait for the Atlanta Black Star to make gentrification an issue. I saw it and I did it myself. I didn't wait for the LA Times to make gentrification an issue. I saw it and I went at it myself. I didn't wait for the New York Times to make gentrification a racial issue. I saw it and I did it myself. And the rest of them are following behind us. That's what happened to you. But here's what you need to understand, Atlanta Black Star and the Atlantic and all of the others who saw gentrified and you were scared because you understood that we were setting the trend and we were driving the events and you had fallen behind. You haven't just fallen behind, you fell the hell off. We in the new black media, we're driving the events. We're setting the trends. We are deciding what will be talked about and how it will be talked about. You are following us. You are trying to catch up. You are trying to figure out how to communicate to the people. We're already doing it. We got our finger on the pulse of the people and we know what's going on. You see, you didn't want to talk about economics because you were scared that you would have to tell the whites that you were desperate to get money from that. We need to figure out how to challenge you. And you didn't want to talk about gentrification because I define gentrification as a racial issue, and you're afraid to say that because, once again, you're in Atlanta and you're trying to figure out how to make white interests happy with you. And that is why you can't speak for the people. The people don't want to hear about gentrification as a class issue. They want to hear about it as what their common sense is telling them it is, a racial issue. They don't want to hear about racism. They want to hear about race war because their common sense is telling them they're in a race war now. And you refuse to do that. You refuse to speak to the people where the people are. They're out here in the streets catching hell. They're out here in the streets being shot and gunned down by the police and court system telling them that nothing wrong happened to them. They're out here catching life sentences for having weed while they're seeing white folk being told that using drugs is a mental health issue. It's a public health issue. But when you're black, it's a criminal issue. It's a crime issue. and you won't speak for the people where they are. And that's why the Black Channel became what it is today. You can't ignore us out of existence. Your apathy and failure to do what you were supposed to do, that was what brought us into existence. We were created by the vacuum that you caused to happen. So, yeah, you're in a situation now where you're trying to figure it out. You're not going to be able to give us intelligent black thought light. We got to have full-flavored intelligent black thought. All of this trying to water it down so you can keep your white sponsors happy, that ain't going to work. This idea that black people's survival should be a profit center for you, that's not going to work. You're going to sit here and pussyfoot around the facts and try to water it down and try to curb it and rephrase it to keep your masses happy at the expense of black people. Black folks don't want it watered down anymore. We don't want it rephrased anymore. We want it told straight, no chaser. And you won't do that. So I just want you to know that, yeah, I could file a copyright infringement on you and have you remove that. I could do it, but I won't do it. Not because you're going to help me. No, it's because I want you to know that I know. And you're listening in now, and you should. Yeah, I want you to know. I see you. I see your fear. And this goes for everyone. When you refuse to speak, you're not burying us. We didn't buy all those billboards and TV ads and radio ads across the country because we need you. We bought them in spite of you, not because of you. And because you didn't build us, you can't break us. That's why your attempts to ignore us won't work. You didn't build us. Wherever you got your power from is who can break you. Well, we built it ourselves. Well, guess what that means? You can't break us. Yeah, I know you wish you could, but you can't. You can't break us. And you don't like the fact that we have raised gentrification as a racial issue because you want to be able to sit in Atlanta and deal with white corporations from a butt-dancing, ass-kissing, boot-licking perspective. You're trying to get a job with them. And you don't like us phrasing these as racial issues because you are uncreative, because the old black media is led by our dumbest and densest. That's how you got the Jamela Lemieux and the Jemele Hills and the Roland Martins. Your old black media is led by the dumbest and densest. And they know it. They know it. Roland Martin knows full well. He's not the smartest guy in the room. He's not the 10th smartest guy. Only reason he's there is because he's who's available. Kathy Hughes knows there's a bunch of smarter people than him out there. But again, these companies are led by the dumbest and densest. And that was what opened up the avenue for us. Your own black media talks to you the way the white media does to make you weak and helpless. And black folk who got tired of it, they gravitated here. You see, here's what you don't understand, Atlanta Black Star. My audience won't listen to you. The people who are really concerned about black empowerment, they don't listen to you. They might put up something you say if you actually say something straight, but they don't subscribe to you. They don't follow you. They don't listen to you. Nobody follows Ebony. Nobody follows Jemele Lemieux. Nobody does. You take a look at Roland Martin's YouTube numbers and take a look at mine. It ain't even close. Not even close. You take a look at it on a week-to-week regular basis. It's just him talking, not when he has a guest. The only time he can get any views on YouTube is if he has a guest. You put him out there on his own, one-on-one, just talking behind the mic the way I do. It ain't even close. Yeah, you know who the big dog is. My audience won't listen to you. The intelligent people won't listen to you. The aware people won't listen to you because they know you ain't got nothing to offer. They're not going to listen to you. You're going to spend your time trying to figure out how to make this happen. We don't have to figure it out. We already know. And that's why you are following what we do. You're following it and you're trying to give people some bastardized version. But you're weak. You're a lame MC. We're at the top of the charts and you're some weak, clown-ass Negro over here who don't know what the hell he's doing. You're putting out a bunch of lame rhymes. You're putting out a bunch of lame mixtapes and your crap don't sell. Nobody wants to hear about you doing the damn wobble with Hillary Clinton. We got police out here and white supremacists out here murdering people. And folks need the real answers now. And they don't have time to play your damn political games. You fear us at the Black Channel, the New Black Media. You fear us because you know that you are not fit to survive with us. You do not have the breadth of depth and scope to be able to speak on these issues. You haven't mastered them. Hell, you don't even know what the issues are. If you all go watch their little meandering video, they don't even know what the issue is. They're telling you something bad is happening, but they can't tell you what it is and damn sure can't tell you what to do. And you fear us because we know what the issues are, we know how to say it, and we know what to do. And you're saying, but wait. If you keep turning every discussion into a talk about overturning white supremacy, how am I going to get white sponsors if you keep telling people that the problem is white supremacy? That's the problem at the Atlanta Black Star. That's the problem at the Atlantic. That's the problem with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. That's the problem in the old black media. They're not trying to stop white supremacy. Damn sure not trying to create black empowerment. They're trying to figure out how they can get a better job in it. If Jamila Lemieux were capable of creating something like the Black Channel, she'd have done it. I'm going to say it straight like it is. Baby, if you could have done what we do, you would have done it by now. But you can't. And you couldn't, and you never will. And you can put together a Twitter page with a bunch of bots and a bunch of fake profiles and a bunch of fake subscribers, but when you show up in person and it's time to see how many thousands of people will react to you, you can't get it. When the Black Channel holds live events, we get thousands of people. When we put out our movies, thousands of people show up, thousands of people purchase. Tens of thousands of people see. She can't do that. The subscriber numbers at Ebony have fallen off a cliff since she got there. If she knew how to build an audience, she'd be able to do it. The reason you can't build an audience, Jamila, is because you don't know how to speak to the people. You don't speak for the streets. You speak for the hoes. Roland Martin doesn't speak for the streets. He speaks for the coons. Stephen A. Smith don't speak for the streets, he speaks for the clowns. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution doesn't speak for the people, they speak for the weak. They speak for the dumb. And you're playing this tremendous game of catch-up, and you can't catch up. You're too inept and incompetent to even be able to do it. You don't even know what the issue is. So I just wanted to let you know, yeah, I saw your little video. And if that's the best you can do with all of your resources, and that's the best you can do, you might as well go ahead and shut down your website and close the doors now. Save yourself the trouble, because you don't have a future. If what I saw in your videos after all of these years, we started working on 7 a.m. in 2013, and all these years, I'm working on my third film project, fourth event, third film project, and if this is the best you could do, with all this lead time and all these resources you've got, if the best, if all you could come up with at the Atlanta Black Star is somebody with Windows Movie Maker splicing together a bunch of incoherent clips, if that's the best you could do, then you might as well go ahead and shut it down now. You don't know how to articulate what black people are thinking. You don't know how. You have no clue. And I just wanted to let you know I watched it, I saw it, and I was impressed. As a matter of fact, I found it to be reassuring that the Black Channel will be the definitive voice for black people going forward. Now, what is that exactly that I mean for those of you who are not aware, because I have to understand that people are keeping up with us from time to time. I'm working on a new film project as we speak. The title of it is Race War. I have spoken to a number of people already. I plan on having the first trailer done. I will feel I have enough footage ready that I'll be able to make an inaugural presentation within the next 2 to 3 weeks. I feel like I'll be able to do that. And when I do that, with the first trailer that comes out, I don't know how long it'll be. I don't know exactly what I'll do with it. And it may not even be a trailer. It may just be a clip from it. I may just put together a first look. It might be a minute. It might be 30 seconds. It might be 5 minutes. I don't know. It depends on how I feel about it. But I want you, I'll probably keep it to around a minute, maybe two if I'm feeling really daring. And you compare those 30 seconds or those 60 seconds that we put together here, you compare that to the whole 15, 20, 30 minutes that Atlanta Blacks are put together. And you will get more out of us in 30 seconds than you got out of them in 30 minutes. And that's the reason that you can't compete with us. That's the reason. You're trying to trade on a name that you made back during the print media days, and you need to understand you are obsolete. You're obsolete. And from here on in, it's just going to be this slow, not even slow, it's just going to be this steady decline. You are just going to slide into decline as you're already doing. And one day, we might be doing a story about you and about what happened to the old black media when we came along. You're scared. You should be. And we're going to give you a lot more reasons to be afraid. BlackChannelFilms.com, you've been put on notice. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio program. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, my brothers and my sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.